what this turns out to be, a meteorite impact on Apollo 13 that destroyed its electrical system and its command ship oxygen system. As far as I know, this is the first record of any damage done by meteorite impacts on a manned spaceship. There have been some hits, but little things that just dented. And we'll know, in a way, it will only be a suspicion, but the telemetry data is all collected and stored on tape in Houston. And one day, when this is all settled and everybody's safely home, they'll run that stuff back and they'll trace it down to the split second when something went wrong and try to find out where it went wrong and why. If it was internal, it will show on the tape. If it was external from something in space, it'll remain a suspicion.
In case you've just joined us, there is a problem with Apollo 13. There will be no moon landing. The flight is being cut short. The astronauts are in no immediate danger. There's plenty of oxygen on board. But there was an electrical dropout, a failure aboard the command ship about 4 hours and 20 minutes ago. Right now, Jim Lovell and Fred Hayes are in the limb. Jack Swigert still in the command module. I assume completely shutting it down, or merely just resting there now. We haven't heard from Swigert in quite a while. Lovell and Hayes have their problems in the limb. Antenna configuration is the biggest problem, lining up the antenna, and of course Houston has admitted they have a problem on the ground. They hear Lovell and Hayes fine, but it's when Houston calls back up to them that they have a problem. And an additional problem, let's listen. They're very, very noisy. Not readable at all.
And we should re-emphasize, of course, that Apollo 13, the combined spaceships, are right now living on the batteries of the moon lander, and they're good for about 3 to 3.5 days, which is more than needed to get everybody home safely. And the command module has about 2 days' worth of battery power left in it. But the fuel cells, which produce electricity and drinking water, are out. They're gone. They've been damaged somehow. And the fuel cells, which normally would be used to recharge the batteries, cannot be used to recharge the batteries. So we're on about 5 days to 6 days worth of battery power if everything can be cut down to an absolute minimum. In fact, Swigert said earlier he was moving around the command module on the power of the flashlight. Static has been fairly constant, breaking in and out, for now almost 3 hours. More than that, almost 5 hours, isn't it, Bob?
About 2.5
since Apollo 13 ran into trouble and started to go erratic on its course.
And when they can talk with Jim Lovell, although he's very busy doing some things of his own inside the limb, they keep asking Lovell to sight some stars, give him some readings so they can get an exact position on those spaceships, which is, of course, necessary, obligatory for a perfect touchdown, splashdown. And that can come in the Atlantic or the Pacific. They're working on both plans right now.
And I would imagine we probably have some buildup now in what is called the contingency rescue forces. This Apollo 13 flight started off with the smallest number of personnel ships and airplanes on station of any manned spaceflight in our history to date. There are only about 4,750 personnel assigned to this and rescue position. Four ships actually at sea. There used to be anywhere from 18 to 27. There were four for this one. There were nine airplanes, and there used to be anywhere from, well, the minimum number I can remember is 18, and I can remember numbers as high as 100 and a quarter. And there were seven helicopters, and I can remember numbers in the 50s. However, they did use the usual precaution of alerting and putting on standby some of the main United States Air Force bases around the world. For example, there is one close to Ascension Island in the Azores. In fact, there are two rescue airplanes on standby on the airport, ready to go. They also alerted aircraft at Guam and at Okinawa, in Australia, in Hawaii, in the Canal Zone, in South Africa. And all of these planes can be diverted to proximity stations for the ultimate landing point when these men come home. We have communications aircraft, relay aircraft, on station in the Southwest Pacific. We have two in Australia and two at Guam. We have a destroyer flotilla at sea somewhere between Hawaii and Manila. It can be diverted to what they call the Pacific Line, which is everything on 165 degrees west, and go down toward the Iwo Jima to assist, Bob.
As you can hear, it's still nothing but static, as the spaceships now are about 200,000 miles from Earth, and they're working frantically on the ground as rapidly as they can to establish communication. They mentioned the problems on the ground. I suppose it could be at Honeysuckle or at Houston, because it's the Honeysuckle tracking station should have acquired by now. But so far, no luck. The three astronauts are fine. They just can't talk to them right now. The astronauts have been able to talk to Houston. Houston cannot talk back up to them. And that is the problem. We'll be right back with more of our special coverage of the problems confronting Apollo 13 after this 10-second pause for station identification. This is a live special report from ABC Radio News. I'm Bob Walker with Merrill Muller at the Apollo News Center in New York of the shortened flight of Apollo 13. This journey aboard the Odyssey has indeed been a very strange and strenuous journey, as the name Odyssey implies. And the age of Aquarius will have to wait some time now before it reaches the moon. That magnificent little limb will not touch down on the moon on Apollo 13. Houston is still trying to reestablish communications with the spaceships. You can hear the static and the noise in the background. It's a ground problem.
These communications, by the way, are going from the ground, from Houston, by landline or, I'm getting groggy. What do you call the dish that relays a voice?
A
microwave.
Aquarius, Houston, how do you read?
Clear. I was trying to say this is by satellite relay. Call is very clear to Houston. No, that was Houston calling Aquarius. Sorry, the other way around. But the static has dropped out in the background. That usually indicates they're lining up an antenna.
Joining us in the Apollo News Center here in New York is our colleague Roger Sharp, a veteran space broadcaster. Welcome aboard, Roger.
Thank you, Bob. A night to remember, certainly. Red, earlier you were mentioning the method by which, after all of this is over, and after the astronauts are safely home, how they will try to determine what did happen. Without ever getting the service module back, the evidence itself will sort of remain in outer space, will it not?
No, it's on the telemetry data. It's in the computers. It's in the on the tape in Houston.
The As service, a mechanical...
The service module went out of action. And up to the moment when it went out of action, there is a taped report of all of its functioning services, which is on the record in Houston. They'll roll it back to that point and study it until they break it down to the final item that let go. And if it was an onboard explosion, they will have indications that it was building up. If it was an external hit, there will be no indication, and it will just be a suspicion of an external hit.
So it will always then conceivably remain a suspicion?
As an external hit, yeah. They can eliminate the fact of an onboard explosion because the tape will show them that everything functioned perfectly until bang. If everything did function perfectly. If something was building up toward a dangerous level and blew, that the tape will indicate that. It will not indicate the explosion, but it will indicate the buildup of danger in a particular piece of equipment.
Is there any sort of backup system that might have been developed?
Well, we don't know what's gone wrong. All we know is that they lost power and they started venting something, which we now know must have been oxygen, simultaneously. Now, this could have been one of the fuel cells blowing up, but again, the tape would indicate that a fuel cell was beginning to act erratically. And if one did blow up, and that's rare, it would damage something else.
At the present time, the flight dynamics officer here at Mission Control is computing a maneuver to place Apollo 13 back on a free return trajectory within the next hour. The maneuver would likely come at about 61 hours ground elapsed time. The lunar module primary guidance and navigation system, the so-called PINGS, will be left powered up for the next hour and then powered down to conserve water, which is used for cooling the electronics in the system. We'll stand by as this next maneuver is generated and passed up to the crew, having some communications problem as the spacecraft drifts through the various Omni antenna look angles. The high gain antenna has not been powered up to conserve electrical power.
I can't help but wonder about Ken Mattingly. His hands
at 60 hours, 22 minutes ground elapsed time. Standing by, this is Apollo Control.
That's a complete switch of signals, and they're going to have to explain it. They gave Apollo 13 an ignition time of 79 hours, and they're now talking about an ignition time within the next hour or so, and they're going to have to explain just what they mean. I think what they're doing is merely setting up a computer emergency system if they need it.
Houston, Aquarius, how do you read?
Hello there, Aquarius, loud and clear. Help me now.
Okay, we're reading you loud and clear, Jack. I hope it stays this time.
Okay, we'd like to brief you on what our plan is. We're at this time water critical in the limb, so we'd like to use as little as possible. To do this, we're going to plan to make a free return maneuver of 16 feet per second at 61 hours, which is 37 minutes from now. Then we're going to power down the pings, and then we'll... At 79 hours, we'll go ahead and make another abort maneuver to kick what we got. But we'd like to. Then we'll. At 79 hours, we'll go ahead and make another abort maneuver to kick what we got. But we'd like to get that thing as far down as soon as possible. That'd be after the mid course. And so, how do you feel about making a 16 foot per second burn in 37 minutes?
Well, I'll give it a try, Jack, if that's all we got. That's a 16 foot per second dip burn in 37 minutes.
Roger, we're working up a pad for it, but we'd want to know what you think about doing it at that time.
They're going to use a double maneuver to make
the... Well, I'm sorry, can you give us a little more time?
It's Jim Lovell. He wants to get these spaceships set up. He wants time. But the time now is critical, not... It's critical in the flight plan, that's all. We'll explain it in a minute, when we can.
The DIPS is the descent propulsion system.
And they've got to fire it now on a computerized time and at a computerized speed. They're going to fire
okay,
it
Okay, Jim, we'd like to get a suggested time from you. We can figure out a free return maneuver for any time you want to give us. So if you'll give us the time you'd like to shoot for, we'll figure out a pad.
What they want to do here is pick up a little speed.
Okay, that sounds good. I think if we have a little bit more time, we want to do it right. Step by one.
Pick up a little speed before Apollo 13 goes behind the moon, so they have more of a reserve when they fire behind the moon to get back on a free return trajectory to Earth. It's two firings.
How's that?
Double once an hour.
1 hour?
He's the commander. And Houston's going to let him call the shot.
Okay, Jim, how about 61 hours and 30 minutes? That's an hour and five from now.
He got it.
Okay, we'll do it. We want to be sure we talk back and forth now to make sure we get this burn off right.
Affirmed.
All right, the first burn will come at 61 hours.
Okay, in the interim, Jack, I looked around again and I saw that we have a radar and a landing radar heater breaker, and can I pull those up?
Affirmative, pulling both up.
Let's get this straightened out quickly.
And now we want to ask you a question about alignments and so forth. We wanted to know if you can see any stars out of the AOT. We also wanted to know if you could use the service module to cast a shadow on LM windows and then look out the windows to see stars for P-51. TOS alignment.
They are going...
Okay, in this attitude, Jack, that we're pitching around, I cannot use the AOT to see stars. We're just not able to see them at all. Now, we may be able to maneuver off and yaw. Or roll at these stars. Right now we haven't been able to. The AOT is useless. The command module structure is just radiating too much light into the telescope.
I'm trying to get these.
Okay, fires. And how about using the service module to cast a shadow on the commander's window? If you do that, can you see stars for COAS alignment?
Going to use a small percentage. In fact, at about 3:43 a.m. Eastern Standard Time. Thanks, Bob.
The light shines off our quads, which makes it difficult to see stars. We do have the Earth and Moon, if that could be of assistance.
And they're trying to get a fix in space so they can aim this burn, and what they're going to do is fire themselves toward the moon to
and
pick up speed.
Right now, Jack, I'm looking out the right window, and it's pretty dark out that window, but they're about... 1,000 or so false stars out here left over from some of the debris. It's hard to discern what's the real and not real.
It's 3:43 a.m.
Okay, that's good information. And during the time that we see you're continuing to pitch, if you ever get in a position where you think the AOT might be of some use, we'd like you to periodically look out of it and see if you can see some stars that would enable us to get a P-52.
Okay, will do, and also, let me ask you a question. In this configuration, Doc, we have to use the TTCA to control pitch and roll. And just how much can we use that without really changing our trajectory? We only have 60 miles to play with.
Roger, we'll put that to him.
This will go to the computer men right away. The question there is, they are getting nervous about their own maneuvers up there to get a fix in space because they are maneuvering on their ground track, and their ground track, space track, excuse me, their space track is taking them at the moment within 60 miles of the edge of the moon.
Okay, Jack, are you ready to go to work with me on the two-hour DIPS activation and contingency book page one?
Roger, we're ready to go.
Yeah, let's skip these numbers here for a minute. What they have set up is a plan to burn the descent engine on the moon lander at 3:43 a.m. Eastern Standard Time, or in about an hour from now. And this will be the first of two burns by this engine, by this same engine on the moon lander. to get them into a faster speed behind the moon, and they will burn the engine again behind the moon tomorrow night.
Tonight.
This is Tuesday, right? And burn the engine again tonight and head back to Earth on a free return trajectory using a minimum amount of electrical power and water to get home safely. Roger? Roger, Sharp?
Red Willis, speed them up or advance the time for the second burn as they come around the backside?
No, they've kept that at 79 hours flight time, which is tonight, Tuesday night, Tuesday evening, about 9:13 Eastern Standard Time. But they've moved this burn up considerably. In fact, they've just put it in. It was a surprise to everybody, to the flight crew as well as us.
Red, standing by in Houston right now is correspondent George Engel. George, can you hear me? George, what is the atmosphere there right now? I'm sure it's feverish, but it appears that no one is terribly, terribly concerned that they cannot...
Red, let's go ahead. Step one, page one. Everybody's listening.
This is ground to air control. This is Swigert in the command ship talking with Houston. We'll get back to you, George Engel, in Houston, in just a moment. Swigert is all alone.
Okay, on EPS activation, withdrew that bottom of that page. That's all done.
He's going through a checklist.
We concur, page two.
Are the conditions in the Odyssey command ship? He is in there alone. Lovell and Hayes are both in the
aquarium. Okay, in essence, we've circumvented step four, and we're now sitting with all four decent bats on high voltage tabs, so I'll scratch off step four.
Roger, and in step five, we want to leave inverter one circuit breaker open.
Roger, and step five, we'll leave inverter one CB open.
Omit step six.
Okay, for the time being, our mission timer is the computer, so mission timer activation scratch off.
Roger.
Command ship pilot, Jack Swigert. The battery.
Okay, we've done the primary glycol loop activation.
The whole maze of switches on that panel of the command ship. As it goes down through the various systems, the very involved electronic systems that feed off the power supply, the command ship powered down completely.
Aquarius, we recommend you leave the caution warning off on page three.
Power down to conserve fuel cell. Two.
Okay, I was going to say that next, page three, we'll just scratch item one. And item two, I've already got the RCS heaters on. And I don't know if I gave you the time or you got the time on the primary vap flow number one open.
We got the time.
This dramatically proves that an astronaut has to be an expert engineer as well.
The CB pages now.